Hello and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bound, where today we're asking, should art be political? We're tempted to say the world today isn't a particularly happy one. We've polarised nations that don't seem to understand each other and leaders that people have little faith in or just simply afraid of. In a world where people are feeling isolated and increasingly frustrated with their governments and their media, where do they turn to get their voices heard? In today's show, then, we're going to look at the role of art in the recent political climate, taking the US as our starting point. Since the inauguration of Donald Trump, we've seen art strikes in major American cities, artists like Shepard Fairey and Richard Prince making political statements, and who can forget those thousands of banners and placards on display worldwide during the women's marches. Later on in the show, we'll also hear from Greek artist Denai Stratou about her project that's trying to garner the fraught feelings of the world. But before that, I'm going to be joined in the studio by Ossian Ward, head of content at Listen Gallery, and Marissa Masria-Katz, editor of Creative Time Report, to answer the question, should art be political? Ossian, welcome to the programme.
Hi.
Again.
Yeah,
he's back.
I'm back.
Now, it's a good time to talk to you at the Listen Gallery round the corner from us here in Marylebone. You have a show of Bushra Khalili. Now, her work is political work. It's sort of overtly political work. So first things first, installing that show, having conversations with the artist, how explicit do you, does she, does the team want to be about the deeper meanings of what she's trying to do here?
Well, I mean, she doesn't necessarily, I think she would have come here if she wasn't so busy installing and finishing off the show and talking to people, but she doesn't think of herself as a political artist. I think the idea that people make political art makes them seem like they're sort of campaigning for something, or that they're trying to put their message out there in some sort of way that's it's not necessary to do that if you're an artist. Obviously, you explore things. I mean, her show is built around kind of human stories. So, for want of a better word, refugees, migrants, but they're forced migrants. They're not economic migrants or political migrants. And in fact, she doesn't really like those terms because these are people who are forced to leave their homes. And the main project is called the Mapping Journey Project from 2008, which has been seen in MoMA and New York and various other places, and involves Bushra talking to these people who've been displaced, and you have these maps where they draw with a permanent marker across, showing their journey from, you know, wherever it is, kind of Dubai to Dakar, and how they get across Europe, and when they get to this certain place, they're told they have to go back, or they have to go to Amsterdam for some reason, or stay here.
It's like some sort of perverted kind of board game or something.
Yeah, and it's got all those Kafkaesque moments where it's like, well, stay here for 2 years and you might get this, and then you don't get this pass or permit, or go back to see your uncle. And, you know, some of the journeys that she gets out of these people, they're discussions, they're not interviews, they're just sort of telling their stories of very human problems. And someone just wants to visit their girlfriend who's in Ramallah, but you can't get across these borders unless you have special permits or you're a tourist. Or what are these borders about? So in some ways, Bushra would say, yes, finally, we're talking about political art after all this time. Finally, it's become a thing because a lot of people have been making this kind of art for a long time. But you may be right to say that it's become more urgent. It's become more necessary. It's become a badge of honour. It's become something that if you're not engaged in, then what are you doing? But, you know, obviously artists are different and they have different media. So who knows where that kind of boundary lies.
So within this, even within Bushra's work and your description of it, makes it sound very of the now and therefore political. It is about displacement and all the rest of it, but it is art that is political rather than being political art. And perhaps that is, for an artist, a diminishing term to be described as.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of artists who I've talked about this before would say, well, you know, that dates you immediately. If you make a work that's just about that moment, about Donald Trump or Brexit, you know, that really limits that work to that moment. It doesn't have any resonance beyond that. So actually, this work is from 2008, so it's kind of an old work. It seems current and, you know, that it's of the moment. But someone else we work with is John Okomfor, who's been making these kind of images and films about migrants and travel and the sea and the oceans. But his point is that these migrations have been going on since the 15th century or the 14th century or earlier. You know, people moving across borders and boundaries has happened and will happen forever. So, yeah, it's the age-old story, but I think artists are realising that perhaps their voice is necessary rather than just a kind of shot in the dark.
Okay, well, I'll bring Marissa in now. Marissa Katz on the line from New York. This is an interesting time to be anyone interested in art in New York City, Marissa. I was there last weekend when even some of the placards at the Women's March, which I know that you attended, had an artistic element to it, whether it was the turn of phrase on a placard or whatever. Does it feel that political art is not having a moment, but it is necessarily relevant right now?
I agree with Austin in the sense that the term political art might be a bit problematic. And so what I think we're actually seeing here instead is a lot of artists in the city at the moment are using their skills to a political end, you know, so they are taking their voices and their practices and they're trying to resist very often what we're seeing coming out of the White House. And so in terms of whether or not it's political art, I don't know if we would want to call it that. You know, especially as Asim was saying, you know, a lot of the artists that I work with at Creative Time, particularly on the Reports project, bristle against that term. But they see their practice as being socially engaged in a way that very often has the result of affecting or hopes to change policies or politics.
How's the art world reacted to recent political events in the United States? I mean, obviously there was the art strike where museums put on special programming or simply closed their doors. What was the vibe like during those days? And just generally, Marissa, how do you think the art world has reacted?
Well, I think you're seeing, especially the New York art world, is taking a stance that is what I see as being quite opposed to the presidency. And that a lot of that has come out through the J20 strike, as you had said, where some museums offered their spaces as a place to create protest signs. So, for instance, the Queens Museum, or then you have the Whitney Museum, which was a basically more or less a pay-as-you-wish day on the 20th, on the day of the inauguration. And then you also see a lot of artists who have started movements like the Dear Ivanka protest movement, which was quite a lot of different artists were standing in front of a building owned by the husband of Ivanka Trump. And that was spearheaded by Alison Gingras and Jonathan Horowitz, where there was a campaign that was basically called Dear Ivanka, and they were a group of protesters that gathered, about 150 artists and art world figures, basically standing in Soho with a LED candlelight, you know, vigil, trying to appeal to Ivanka, and in hopes that, you know, having her sensibility affect her father's policies, because they see her somewhat as someone who travels within the circles that they travel in, especially because she is a big art collector. And so you see that kind of movement. You also have seen, so J20 was supported by a lot of different artists, and J20 stands for January 20th. And that movement was basically, you had people like Cindy Sherman and Richard Serra. All of them are trying in their own way to change the discourse or affect the discourse around the art world and the political scene at the moment.
For sure. And it seems like very much this is reactive. This is not necessarily knee-jerk art making, but this is purely reactive stuff. This is people that have a political sensibility that happen to be artists using some of their fame and some of their technique and skills to make a statement and get a reaction, presumably. Ossian, the world of the considered gallery show is obviously something very different. This goes through a different process. We might drop the term political art, as it seems that neither Marissa or you feel that it's a useful one, but art that is of a political bent or ends up being interpreted as such presumably takes years to come to fruition, to make, and presumably if it's still relevant once it's in the gallery, its context changes because of that.
Not necessarily wanting to call it political, but, you know, in a way, that response, that reaction or the protest is perhaps a better way to talk about it, because the Listen Gallery in New York was part of the J20 strike, and actually a commercial gallery sort of has no place in this debate because we're not here or there, or we're not really meant to be making these kind of stands. But quite recently, I staged a thing in London, which we called In Defense of the Demos, and was 15 or so speakers, thinkers, writers, anthropologists, you know, someone from political activism and all kinds of people standing up to talk about what the hell is happening in the world. So there are examples of people reacting quickly because the art world can be quite slow to move. Museums are planned years in advance. So the idea that things have to be done now, these things have to be broken before they get too far, before they become normalised. That is happening, and we're trying to do it. I think whether the generational thing might take a bit longer, you know, if we're talking about what the generation of artists was doing before, were they kind of the snowflake generation of post-internet artists who weren't really bothered about being engaged or, you know, laissez-faire stuff about the internet, and it was all kind of cool. But now, actually, everyone's like, no, we have to do something. So it's difficult to say whether that old adage that you can't change anything with art, it still applies, or whether there's a way to mobilise enough people to help that. Because it seems that that attitude, that laissez-faire, or that, you know, it won't happen on our doorstep, is happening everywhere now. So people do need to mobilise somewhat more, even if it is just in the art world.
Marissa, Rossian raises an interesting point there, the idea of the commercial gallery and the fact that, you know, all imposters should be treated just the same, presumably, that everyone has a viewpoint depending upon, irrespective of whether you're a commercial gallery or you're a public body. Has that felt the same in New York? I mean, with big deal artists like Cindy Sherman manning the barricades, as it were, do people take their protests more or less seriously, I wonder, when they obviously they have fame, fortune, a big gallery behind them?
I haven't seen a discrepancy, really. I think that certainly some of the artists that are joining in on these protests have a larger, more a bigger platform from which to speak. But I think the beauty of even these smaller artists is the beauty of social media, for instance, is there's really an opportunity for people who don't have fame and attention in the traditional sense to also get quite a bit of attention for their work. And I think that that's what we're going to see even more of as we move forward, that there's going to be a variety of ways in which the people will resist and what we're seeing happening in Washington. And I think that the exciting thing and also the horrifying thing about this new president is that he really pays attention in a way that I don't think we've ever seen before from previous presidents. And by that I mean Trump seems to be very aware of what people are saying about him. And so perhaps art in this new era has a way of really connecting to what's happening on the ground in D.C. simply because you have a president who is looking at it and responding to it. And so in many ways, I see art as taking on a very new kind of role in the coming 4 years.
That's an interesting point, actually, because sometimes a criticism that you could level about art that is used in a political way or is explicitly political art is, you could say that our world leaders, the people that we're criticising, maybe they just don't get it, you know? Whereas this stuff is a little bit more direct. And as you say, President Trump is someone that has his beady eyes on social media and all the things that might be out to criticise him. I wonder if that changes the discourse as well. Actually, it becomes more competitive. It becomes a little bit more personal. And art is made quicker and on a more personal level, Marissa.
I think we just don't know just yet what's going to happen, but I do think you're right. I think there's a personal element to this because, frankly, the attacks are personal. Nobody's really hiding behind institutions in the way that they used to, simply because everybody has their own sort of personal brand that they're kind of pushing their images out or speaking from. So whether it's their Twitter feed or Instagram or whatever it is. So I think it will take on quite a personal tone. But at the same time, I do think that what we're seeing, which is really exciting on the ground here, are collectives that are forming and people are very much feel that the power in numbers is also going to be something that's going to change the discourse, or at least have the president respond to their messages in a way that I think it was quite disparate before this election, in the sense that you had some artists that were political, some that weren't, some that saw power in what they were doing, some that didn't want to identify in a political fashion. But now I think that's all changed. And I think we're all looking to one another to see how we can affect change, but not just on our own, because we're seeing how important it is, as especially after last weekend, what a powerful message the numbers can also be, even if they are being misinterpreted and denied by the White House. I think we need to figure out a way in the art world to reach larger audiences. And I think that's happening right now. The wheels are turning, and we're going to see how all of this thinking impacts the discussion in the months, weeks, and years to come.
I wanted to go back to what we started talking about, sort of behind the scenes at Listen, in a way. When you're hanging a show of something like Ai Weiwei or Bushra Khalili, indeed, what are the conversations you have during that hang? Are they interpretive of the work? Are they somewhere between the aesthetic and the practical? A little bit to the left, a little bit to the right? Does it depend on the subject matter of that work, the atmosphere in which that final hang of the show is done?
I mean, a minute ago she said to me, yeah, well, even aesthetics is political. Every decision you make is political. It doesn't mean that the work is inherently political. You know, I still think that these are stories about real people. They're human stories. They're not necessarily kind of done in a campaigning way. But I think that every decision you make has that political edge and can result in a show that does feel like it means something rather than something that's made to delight or, you know, fill you with awe. It's made to think, it's made to give you some introspection, made to, you know, make you go away thinking of what you've just seen. So I think those kind of conversations are more about how to open it up, not how to close it down and say, this is what this means and we must say it in the press release and say it like that and, you know, underline it. It's got to be open. It's got to have, people have got to be able to go away with it and think about it and, you know, it's got to expand in their minds rather than be, you know, didactic. And I think that's where you get into agitprop, you get into the propaganda side of art where you're saying, you know, we hate Trump and that's fine, but that's just pure protest. You need to be more nuanced. You need to have some more subtlety in there. And I think that's where artists can really help because they think these things through and they have a sort of sharper mind.
And just a final quick one for both of you. Marissa, do you think the political times in which we live at the moment offer up a lot of opportunity for artists to really find a voice, make art that stands the test of time and that cuts across boundaries that perhaps people might have found the art world and contemporary art sometimes befuddling, that now there is a cause and a direct case for very communicative, direct artwork?
There is a need to upend traditional takes on what's happening right now. That need is more pronounced than ever because we have encountered a moment in time where what we thought was real and truthful is now being told to the general public as being otherwise. And it's coming from the highest office in this country. And so we need, in my opinion, artists who have always looked at things through a different lens to help us understand what it is that we're seeing and hearing and experiencing. Do you know Laura Poitras, the filmmaker who created, who's part of The Intercept, and she created a short video that just came out that looks at the length of the proposed wall that Trump is planning on building between the United States and Mexico. And it's a 6-minute video that pretty much flies over the length of the land that he's talking about. And all of a sudden, you're looking at it from this bird's eye view and you're like, this is massive. This is huge. And so even though we all think, you know, I'll say in my own circle that the notion of building this wall is absolutely ridiculous. Well, then when you see an artist like Laura Poitras, who's taken it and actually showing us this strip of land, it even becomes more overwhelming and you understand the breadth of this proposition. And I just feel like it's women like her or other artists that can take these moments of where most of us are totally perplexed by the propositions coming out of the White House and help us to understand it. And then from that place, a lot of people, I imagine, will be able to move forward or will be able to understand the complexities in a way that journalism cannot deliver. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well said. Yeah, no, it sounds exactly the kind of thing that this one image, this film of one image, anyway, is worth a thousand words.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the idea that what's newsworthy needs to become thought-provoking, and perhaps the sort of the slippage of the time between reflecting on something that's just happened and the time between making a work of art about it might telescope and might get shorter. You know, an example, I'll go back to Ai Weiwei because we've been working with him on this refugee project, but it's taken him a long time to go and film from Lebanon to Greece to, you know, all these different places that he's been following the trail. But that will then eventually lead to something which might be, you know, this film, he's making a feature film. So that sometimes there has to be a little period of reflection in between, but I'm thinking that with events becoming so urgent that this will become quicker and the turnaround will be faster and people will become more responsive. But the idea that something is newsworthy, it needs to be more than that. It needs to be more than a reflection of what's going on. It needs to be a twist on that.
Okay, well, thank you very much, both Marissa Katz in New York and Ossian Ward here in the studio in London. Before we go, let's hear from an artist then. Dinais Stratou is a Greek sculptor and multimedia artist whose latest project sets out to voice the feelings of a particular place in a particular time. Open the Black Boxes is the title of her exhibition that's toured Greece, Austria and France. Through an online form, Stratou invites anyone, anywhere to write down one word that represents something they fear or something they want to protect. And these words then appear in black boxes within the country that they've been submitted from. On her recent trip to London, Dinais Stratou explained the project to producer Holly and her thoughts on art's place in the political conversation.
The project is called It's Time to Open the Black Boxes, and it consists of 100 black industrial boxes which have a screen and a word appears and then a count up or a countdown number. They're placed on the gallery's floor, and the idea is that the black box of the airplane, when we find a black box of the airplane, we actually find out why an accident happened. In this case, I was interested to use this symbolical form, but to open the black boxes before the final accident happened. So it's like a giant alarm or a time bomb. So the words appear and then there's a count up or a countdown, and this ends up in a flat line or in an explosion because it's all related, and I will try to explain how. So this gives the sense of urgency that we need to do something now to bring to light what we need to change as a society, and to do it fast.
The contents of these boxes, the words that are in, they are dictated by people of the city that you're exhibiting this in.
Exactly.
How does that work?
Yeah, so initially I had not thought of this idea. I was thinking that I would, you know, sort of with the research team find the words, but then things started, becoming really, really bad in Athens. People started committing suicide because they could not stand, you know, what was happening, and they were losing their dignity or they couldn't support their families. And I thought, you know, any art project, even if it's related to what's happening, it needs to reflect what people are feeling as well. So then I came up with this idea of making the project participatory. So basically I opened a call with asking two questions and asking people to send one word as a reply to one of these two questions. And the questions are, what threatens you mostly? Or what do you feel is being threatened and you would like to protect? So what we need to protect and what threatens us. Basically, this reflects our hopes and fears in reality. So it's like a mapping of our humanity, of the emotions of humanity. I mean, it was interesting to see in Greece in 2012 when the project started that the word that came most times was the word dignity. So that we see that as the crisis is deepening, and it's a multifaceted crisis, so it's of the society, of economics, of the environment. I think it's different phases of the same crisis, basically, that we're going through since 2008, when everything started collapsing. And it's been extremely interesting to see how societies have very similar, but also quite different concerns as well.
And has there been any results that you've been particularly surprised by?
Not surprised. I was surprised with myself on how addictive is not the right word to say, but it was like a need. Everyone, I mean, this participatory aspect of the project, because I had not worked like that before, but it made me every morning I needed to go to my computer and see what new words there are there. And it was very, very exciting in this way. And to see people, and it's touching as well, really, to see what that people were really trying to find what expresses them best. And I see, of course, as that as time passes and as the crisis is deepening, and we're so many threats now, are especially in Europe, not only in Europe, because we saw what happened in America too. But there is definitely a big concern on, you know, the tendency move to the right, to the far right. And people are very concerned of that and of, you know, inclusion. People want inclusion. Of course, people who would participate in such a project are people who are progressive. But there is an alarm.
We're living in a world at the moment that's become so polarised, and you look at nations like Britain and the US and there's almost sort of a 50-50% divide between people at the moment, and one side very much doesn't seem to understand the other side. Was that reflected in the responses you got? Did you find that there was a split in what people were scared of and what people were hoping for?
Well, as I said, mostly the people who participate in an art project, or an audience for that matter, in a progressive talk, for example, would be people who are progressive people and who are threatened by these divisions. But I think that it's very, yeah, what you're saying is very, very true. And this polarization is extremely frightening. And I feel that in all of the places that the project has traveled, and that it's a very, very big concern.
So do you think that art at the moment has a responsibility to be political, because so many people feel misrepresented by their government and by the media?
Yes, I think all art is political anyway. It's not about the theme. So this project has a political theme as well, because it's a reaction to political and social political crisis, of course. But an art project that addresses nature is also a political project. So I think that, yes, artists, of course, are political beings, more so perhaps than others. And I believe that art has a very big obligation to be part of the dialogue today, because it functions in quite a different way to other forms of communication. So it can raise an awareness in a way within all of us in a different way to other forms of language. So it's it functions on the subconscious, on our emotions. So it brings out and it helps us see, open a window in the world in a different way than a political speech, let's say. So it's very, very important. I mean, I think it's our obligation for everyone, actually, not just artists, but I think that we all need to realize in this era that we need to take things in our hands, and it's up to us to make this change to the positive, because the opposite is extremely frightening and threatening.
So do you think art has the power to change things?
I think that it's the process that changes things. So it's not art itself, it's not one project that would suddenly change the world, but the voices that come together, and then things can change. So, for example, through It's Time to Open the Black Boxes, it's exactly this, that by finding the one word that best expresses your fear or your hope, then it's the first step in order to do something about that and make the change. A small change, each one of us can make small change, but if we connect all these small changes, then something big can happen, and it's up to us.
That was the Greek artist Dinai Stratoun. To take part in her installation, head to opentheblackboxes.com. And that brings us to the end of today's show. You've been listening to Culture. My producer was, never without her sandwich board, Holly Fisher. Join me again at the same time next week, but for the time being, I've been Robert Bounds, and thanks for tuning in.